Without further ado, let's begin. What I would like to do to start off the live stream, because people are still getting in, is talk about some news items that have interested me. Okay, so basically, I want to in these live streams interact with everyone, but at the same time give people insight into how I think about the world and how I go about doing research. So I'm going to share some screenshots with you and show you how I go about watching the news, interpreting the news, and analyzing the news. First of all, guys, I hate to break this to you, but I am not a spy. Okay? I do not work for government. I do not have these huge resources behind me. I am not CIA. I am not Chinese MSS, Ministry of State Security. I am not Mossad. I'm not FSB. I don't work for any organization. I'm not Skull and Bones. I just work by myself. I don't have any sources. No one's providing me any confidential sources of information. I don't have a team behind me. I'm just one guy sitting in my bedroom, doing research, watching some YouTube videos, and providing my analysis to the world. I don't even have subscriptions to major publications such as New York Times, Wall Street Journal, the BBC. I don't watch any of these mainstream news outlets. My two primary sources of information are Twitter and YouTube. And then I use Google as well. I don't even have ChatGPT. So to demonstrate how I do research and analysis, let me share my screen for you, okay? So the first thing that caught my attention this week is Ivanka Trump does a interview that goes viral on the internet, right? So let's very quickly look at her comments. Okay, so again, this is interesting because Ivanka Trump doesn't really do interviews. And when she does interviews, it's going to be strategic. So I think she's doing this interview because she's really proud of this project and she wants the world to know what a virtuous person she is and how it's really a passion project. But as you can appreciate, people didn't really perceive it that way, okay? So this is from The Guardian. And this is about how protests in Albania broke out over the luxury resort. And this has been going on for a few days now. And we're not going to read the article, but when I read this article, when I heard the news, I actually didn't believe it because in my mind, I thought that Albania was a pretty corrupt place and the Kushners are just a front people for powerful people who want to create this project, basically oligarchs. And so I was shocked when I read that there were protesters in Albania. And I didn't really pay much attention to these protests, but it kept on appearing on my timeline. And so I started to open this Guardian article to see what's really going on. And basically, when there are protests, There are two questions that I ask in order to better understand what's going on. First of all, who's organizing these protests? And second of all, who's funding these protests? So here in this Guardian article, if you read it, it tells you that there are these environmental NGOs, a leading conservation group called the Protection and Preservation of the Natural Environment in Albania. So it's an NGO. And whenever there's an NGO operating in Eastern Europe, you always think George Soros, Open Society. So I just started to Google this organization, figure out who funds them. And here it says there are three funding organizations. There's WWF Global, there's EC, there's CEPF. So these are rich people who are interested in conservation. So that makes sense. But we can also imagine that George Soros is behind it. Because if you look at who's speaking out about the luxury resort and who's articulating the discontent, it's usually young people who've studied abroad, and George Soros and the Open Society have been very instrumental in helping educate young Eastern Europeans into Western ideology. Okay, so again, I'm not making a judgment on what's going on, but I'm just trying to figure out who are the people in this story, so I can better analyze how they might proceed. Now, what also caught my eye this week is this news story from NBC News. It's an exclusive from NBC News. And what they're telling us is that there are officials within the Pentagon who are very, very concerned about Israeli spying. Guess what, guys? The one country that is the most active in spying on the American military is, of course, Israel. They're much more effective than the Russians, the Chinese, the British. And so why is this an issue now, right? Why are people concerned about Israeli spying today when for the past 50 years, no one's talked about how the Israel stole nuclear weapon, the Israel stole nuclear weapons technology from the United States. No one talked about the 1967 USS Liberty. Why is the Pentagon now concerned about Israeli spying? Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Congress is planning to pass something called Section 224 of the National Defense Budget. And this, as you know, has been generating a lot of controversy. And when something is controversial, I like to hear or understand different sides. So we're going to go to AIPAC, okay? AIPAC will probably offer us the most useful analysis of what's going on. Because we know right away what the concern is, right? What the concern is that the United States and Israel will merge their militaries, and Israel will have access to America's most sensitive technology. And basically, the United States will be all in Israel. So if Israel were to start a war against Turkey, against Egypt, which is something that they've talked about, then the United States is stuck in the Middle East forever. So there's a lot of concern about the United States-Israel military cooperation. And so it's really important to hear the other side. So we're going to look at how AIPAC tries to spin this, okay? So first of all, AIPAC's trying to sell to politicians and the public why it's important to pass Section 224. And it lists a lot of reasons, but basically, these are reasons that that this basically made up. There's really no good reason. The dangers are much more greater than the benefits, okay? Now, what's interesting is that the AIPAC is going to offer spin. They're going to try to spin Section 224. So let's read some together. Myth number one, Section 224 will merge the U.S. and Israel militaries, okay? And what the argument is, Section 224 does not create joint command structures or transfer any decision-making power to Israel. It establishes a coordination mechanism for Defense Technology Corporation, formalizing and strengthening existing cooperation. This doesn't actually refute the concern that these militaries are merging. What this is saying is that Israel will not take control over the U.S. military, but no one's saying that Israel will control the U.S. military. Everyone's just saying that these militaries will merge, and this will present a lot of strategic problems for the U.S., especially in the Middle East. Basically, if Israel were to start a war, the United States would have no choice but to support Israel, even without congressional approval. Okay, let's go over to myth number two. Section 224 doesn't benefit America. The fact, Section 224 will improve defense cooperation with Israel. Okay, yeah. But again, we just said that might be a problem because Israel starts these wars for no reason, and America will be dragged into these wars. And hence, U.S.-Israel cooperation will help ensure American troops have access to the best technologies to remain safe and effective on the battlefield. Huh. Well, if American troops were not in battle to begin with, they'd be safer, right? So America has no reason to start wars. Israel does have reason to start wars. So Israel, this AIPAC document is not actually helping the case. Myth number three. Section 224 is a backdoor way to provide military aid to Israel. There's nothing mythical about this. This is just factual. Section 2 does not authorize a single dollar of new aid or facilitate the transfer of any additional arms to Israel. Okay, but what the document would do is change the definition, right? So before, America was providing aid to Israel. Now it's just providing resources to itself, which Israel can partake in, right? This is just spin. This makes no sense. Number four. Section 224 will give Israel influence over U.S. defense programs or supply chains. Same as myth number one. So no one's saying that Israel will take over the U.S. military. What we're saying, though, is that Israel will be able to have greater influence over decision-making. Okay. Number five, Section 224 will give Israel access to U.S. military data. Okay. Right. So nothing in this section 224 authorizes unrestricted sharing of U.S. military data. Existing security, classification, and technology protection requirements remain fully in force. Okay. So we already said that Israel spies on America, on the American military. So they can still spy in secret and no one will bother them. Okay. Myth number six. Section 224 will weaken congressional oversight and transparency. Yeah, this is the main argument. But let's see what they say. Section 224 increases transparency and accountability by creating new reporting requirements, congressional briefings, annual assessments on cooperative programs, and public updates. Provision will have no effect on existing congressional oversight authority over arms sales or appropriations. Again, before I thought that AIPAC was really impressive, and having read this document, I have to say that this is all complete nonsense. Right? Because what people are concerned about is that Congress will have no oversight over the cooperation between Israel and the United States. And what they're saying is, well, you can still monitor what the military is doing, but if it's not clear the cooperation between the United States and Israel, then how can Congress properly analyze or understand this level of cooperation, right? So it seems like Section 224, it's meant to obfuscate or hide the full extent of cooperation between the U.S. and American militaries. Okay, so that's why it's important to read the other side, because when you read the other side and you realize the problems with the other side, then that bolsters your understanding of the situation. Another news item that caught my attention is how, this is from the Associated Press, by the way, how Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and Sam Altman are talking about public ownership and AI. So we're not going to read this article, but the point is that Bernie Sanders is very much concerned about the public risk of AI. He's concerned that that these companies, OpenAI, Anthropic, they might develop sentient AI, AGI, that could destroy the world. And so the government need to be more involved. He's also concerned about the environmental and economic costs of AI. Is it going to destroy jobs? Is it going to consume too much electricity and fresh water? Now, whenever you see Bernie Sanders and Seth Ullman on the same headline, you should be concerned. Because what Seth Ullman really wants is for a public bailout, right? So I've talked about this in my lectures where it is impossible for these AI companies to make any money. They are not profitable by themselves. So what they want is government to subsidize their enterprise, and they'll have complete control over information and surveillance, right? But it's a public that pays for everything. So what Seth Ullman basically wants to do is for the government to buy out the data centers from him and subsidize the cost for running AI. Then OpenAI will be profitable. And so this is all a giant scam, guys. Bernie Sanders is part of the scam. If Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and Seth Ullman are working together, you know it's really, really bad. And so this is something that we should watch out for, okay? My prediction is that the government at some point will come in and make public these data centers, because these data centers are really, really expensive. Also, Larry Fink has voiced concern that there might be some public outrage over these data centers, and there might be public sabotage against these data centers. Well, once the government takes them over, then these data centers can become military bases, right? Good luck trying to attack a data center if it's a military base. Okay, so this is very concerning. Now, one last news item I want to look at is Candace Owens in Russia, okay? Candace Owens in Russia. Because the first question for everyone is like, why would Candace Owens go to Russia? Okay. So we're going to have a quick look over her Twitter account. She has almost 8 million followers, by the way. So what's pinned is Candace Owens goes to Russia, and she's it's her first time in Russia, obviously, and she's surprised by how beautiful it is. I'm sure Moscow is a beautiful city. Okay, then we go on, and Candace Owens says, we told Russia they couldn't have Starbucks, and they said, fine, we'll just change the name. Okay, so they did this for every brand they got sanctioned, just made it their own. And what you're saying is that American sanctions don't really work. She continues to make fun of Erica Kirk. And here, she's responding to Glenn Beck's argument that Candace is becoming a bridge between the United States and Russia. And what she responds, and she responds by saying, the spirit of Christianity does not exist beneath a yarmulke, kissing a wall in a city where religious leaders teach their children to spit upon those who worship Jesus Christ. It would therefore be my distinct honor to become the bridge that unites Christians in the East and Christians in the West. So basically, she's a Catholic, and Russia is Orthodox. So she's trying to reconcile these two religions, which basically split about 1,000 years ago. Moscow is one of the most beautiful cities I've ever been to, and I will return. Thank you to the Russian people for the warm welcome. And this is really important, okay? So what Candace Owens is saying is like, from now on, I'm going to go to Russia more, and I'm going to promote deeper understanding between Russia and America, okay? So those are the news items that I am looking at. So, guys, are there any questions about the news items that you would want me to clarify before I continue? I'm watching the chat now. and maybe someone can come in and ask a question about some of the news items. But basically, what I will try to do in this live stream is show you what's interesting me and how I go about analyzing and thinking about these news items. Because again, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a deeper understanding of the world, and I'm trying to make predictions about how the world will develop. So we have Wal Enkidu. Yes. So Wal Enkidu asks, what is Candace's agenda? That's a really good question. Okay. So I've been thinking about this for the longest time. Because, you know, Candace Owens had this public, split, from Ben Shapiro. And Candace Owens, I think, converted to Catholicism about a couple of years ago. Her husband, George Farmer, is a Catholic convert as well. So Candace Owens is by far the bravest media personality in the world. She's got balls, man. I mean, like, the balls on her. I mean, it's just incredible how, I don't even know how heavy her balls are, but she is fearless. And I ask myself how she does that, because I'm not fearless. I'm very cautious about what I say. The major difference between Candace Owens and myself is, like, I don't really name names, because that's how you get in trouble, right? You don't go after one particular person, because then that person has come after you. So she's gone after Erica Kirk for a long time. Before that, she went after the Macrons, you know, and like, they tried to sue her. So she went after a head of state, the head of state of France. So you ask yourself, what's going on here? And I'm going to make certain assumptions, okay? So in game theory, it's really important to make assumptions that you can validate against reality. So my assumption is that she is very close to the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church is the most powerful organization in the world. I'm not saying she's close to the Pope. I'm saying she's close to certain elements within the Catholic Church that have their own agenda. And these might be Jesuits. This might be a certain faction of the Jesuits, okay? But they support Candace. They offer opportunity. And her going to Russia suggests that this particular faction is very interested in a reconciliation between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, because they see the great enemy as American materialism, secularism, liberalism. And these are honest people. These are people of honest faith. Okay, I'm not saying these are politicians. I'm saying these are people who are generally concerned about the direction of the Western world, with all this mass immigration, with all this materialism, the spread of OnlyFans, the popularization of people like Andrew Tate. And they see Candace Owens as a vehicle in order to promote greater faith among young people. And she's doing a fantastic job. So I think that's her role. Her role is to create a spiritual awakening, to get people to return to Jesus, the original teaching of Jesus, not Protestantism, which is a corruption of the teachings of Jesus in the church, but a return to the original church, which is really the Orthodox faith, right? So that's why I think Candace went to Russia, to unite the traditionalist elements of both the Catholic Church as well as the Orthodox Church, and promote a spiritual awakening in the world. That, I think, is her agenda. Okay, I could be wrong, but I think that's what's motivating her. And that's why she's getting so much support from both Russia as well as the Vatican. All right? All right, what is the significance of Candace? This is from Lauren. So I think the fact that she's a charismatic, young mother who is Black, and she has 4 kids. She represents really a role model for a lot of young religious people, right? It's like she represents what young women should be. They should strive to embrace the Catholic faith or any religion, basically. You should strive to have as many children as possible. You should strive to live a life of Christ, right? She's always saying Christ is king. So that's what I think that is her significance. No one else does what she does, right? I mean, no one else is of the role model that she is trying to become. Golda Gold says, compute futures just launched. So yes, retail investors funding data. Look, this is a strategy of these guys, okay? OpenAI, AI does not make money by itself because there's no market for it. So what you do is you just unload the cost on retail investors, on government, on anyone except yourself. And you're the one who is pocketing the profits, right? Luca says, how do you select interesting news? Great question. All right. So this is how my mind works. My mind has a theoretical framework for how the world works, okay? I think like there's a certain structure to the world. I have certain theories about the agenda of certain individuals. And so I get interested in news when dissonance is created, when something happens that doesn't really fit into my worldview. So for the longest time, I thought that Ivanka and Jared Kushner are extremely private individuals who shy away from the spotlight. So when they appear in the spotlight, making an announcement, that's news to me, right? Because like, what's the agenda here? Because these are private people and they don't want all the scrutiny. So if they're coming out and making public statements, there must be a reason. Okay? So that interests me. Bernie Sanders is not an AI guy, right? Bernie Sanders, he's a socialist. He's also over 80 years old. He doesn't understand anything about AI. So when Bernie Sanders is sitting down with Sam Altman, that is dissonance. That's newsworthy to me. We just assume that the Pentagon and issue are very close. When Pentagon insiders are leaking news of discord between Israel and the Pentagon, that's news. That's dissonance. That doesn't make any sense, right? Israel is a mercenary army subcontracted by the Pentagon to create as much conflict as possible in the Middle East. Why is the Pentagon talking crap about Israel? That's newsworthy, okay? So it's the idea of dissonance. Something like that appears that shouldn't be there. It doesn't fit into the regular worldview that I have. Okay. Gnome says, it would be helpful if you have someone monitoring the chat while you speak. That is a great suggestion. It's my first time doing a live stream, and it's a lot harder than it looks, okay? It's really hard. I've done quite a few live streams with Sneeko, and like his eyes are everywhere. It seems as though he's able to focus on three different things at once. I can't do that. My mind will go berserk if I did that. So you're absolutely right. Let me figure this out. Let me figure out how to get a moderator in here. And also, maybe next time or maybe a couple months from now, we'll do a Zoom conversation so like each of you will have the opportunity to participate. And then I can just rest, right? Because right now I'm just talking. Again, these streamers like Hassan Piker, Sneeko, my hat's off to them because I don't know how they do this. They do this like 8 hours a day, by the way. We might go on for like another hour, but I'm already, it's been half an hour and I'm already exhausted. Matthew DiMarcantonio says, fun comment, your article on Peter Thiel's Republic circulated among the Thiel fellows. Yeah. First of all, the Thiel fellows are a very impressive group of kids. I actually met one of them in Dubai, and he's very, very impressive. They're really, really smart. So I appreciate the fact that they're open-minded and they're curious and they're looking at things from a different angle. Also, like if you read the article, even though what Peter Thiel is doing is pretty evil and dangerous, I'm pretty respectful of him because I like it when people who are evil actually know what they're doing, because then it's just easier for me to understand their motivations and predict how they behave. Like Peter Thiel is a chess player. And like the other person I admire a lot is Vladimir Putin, okay? He's also evil and he's also dangerous. But I admire Vladimir Putin because things he does makes actually sense, okay? So people that annoy me are people like Donald Trump, and because he's always confusing me and it's driving me insane. It's hard for me to anticipate Donald Trump's next moves. Whereas Vladimir Putin, Peter Thiel, these guys, I respect, I admire because what they do makes actual strategic sense. So I think that Peter Thiel going to Argentina is really important. It gives you tremendous insight into how the world works. And if you look at this past week, Javier Milei in Argentina has been passing these laws that are making it a lot easier to start AI companies, to remove public scrutiny from AI companies. So basically, Javier Milei is doing whatever Peter Thiel wants him to do and trying to create an AI surveillance state in the Western Hemisphere. Okay, so Peter Thiel, if you are watching this, I admire you. I respect you. I'm your friend, okay? Sand the Scribe says, when you said about the AI bailout, that means they're asking for a government contract. Also, what does it mean for the people on the government? No, they're not asking for a government contract. They're asking for the government to buy out the data centers. They're asking for the government to take a stake in their companies. That's what they really want, okay? Because the idea is like, look, if the government is part of the company, what you can do is you can socialize the losses and privatize the gains. That's what they want right now, okay? Right now, they're stuck with the losses. The government comes in, then what you can do is you can steal money from the enterprise and put it in your own pocket and that of your private investors, and the government will pick up the tab. Like, that's how these people think. They're crooks, man. They're hustlers. They're not entrepreneurs. So what Matthew was saying, that is some Peter Thiel fellows are fans of mine. Great, you know, I'm a fan of Peter Thiel's as well. Adam Mahasi says, do you think the Albanian protests are not organic in nature? Yeah, I don't think they're organic in nature. It's strange to me how in these, you know, Eastern European nations, how these protests happen. It's very much a color revolution playbook where you have these NGOs all around the country, and it's a network of them, right? All funded by George Soros, Open Society. They're all trained in Washington, D.C. on how to organize these protests. They're getting tons of media coverage, right? And like the people you see on the BBC talking about these protests are like these young, good-looking, articulate, English-speaking Albanians. They're a minority. They're a faction of the country. Another comment I'll make is, why is it that you have the George Floyd protests, but now that you have this war in Iran, there are really few protests? Do you think No Kings is organic in nature? There has to be funding behind it. There has to be organization behind it. So I don't think what's happening in Albania is at all organic. I mean, like, I can understand if they're protesting corruption in the government. I can understand if they're protesting taxes, right? But the fact that you have these rich people who've bought out an island and want to develop it economically, that doesn't make any sense to me why the Albanians would get upset over this. All right. But again, it's all speculation. I don't know. I'm following the news as everyone else. I don't have inside information. I'm just thinking using game theory what is transpiring. Go says, what do you think about SpaceX and OpenAI and public IPOs coming and how it will affect market? Look, I have to say this, but the stock market, the financial markets are no longer retail. It's just a few people who control all the resources, and SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic, I mean, like, it's a pump and dump scheme where these investors are going to blow it to the moon, and then when retail comes in, they're just going to dump it, and they keep on going. They can keep on doing this for forever because, again, only a few people: BlackRock, Vanguard, Blackstone. These companies, they control all the money in the world, right? So it's a casino. It's a house will always win. So get out of the stock market. That's my best advice. Get out of the stock market. You look at oil futures. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. The Strait of Hormuz has been closed for the past 3 months, and oil should be at $200 by now. It's not. And this tells you that these financial markets are rigged. It's not a fair game. Oracle says, do you keep notes of important news items or themes to connect them later on? Okay, this is interesting. I have friends who are writers, journalists. And they have these thick notebooks. And they carry a notebook wherever they go. So like, you know, like if they hear something, they'll write it down. They see something, they'll write it down. I don't do that. What I do is I keep it in my mind, okay? So basically, if I see something similar in the news, I say, that's interesting. I should refer back to it later on. All right. So if you come to my house, I have no notes. If you look at my computer, I have no notes. It's all in my mind. And the reason why I do that is to maintain maximum flexibility. Okay. I basically put the news item in short-term memory. And I say, and I ask myself, okay, will this thing escalate? Will this thing continue? If it does, then I pay attention to it. So I transfer it from short-term memory into long-term memory. Okay. And that's what gives me maximum intellectual flexibility. It's something that I do because, I have a very good memory, a very strong memory. I remember most things that people tell me. I remember most things, most things that I read. So I don't need to keep notes. Okay. Kevin asks, how do you shift through nonsense on these websites? Also, how do you find news on Twitter? Are there people you follow? So I just go over the Twitter feed and I look at things that catch my attention. What's really important is to be able to figure out what is newsworthy and what is just clickbait, right? Because on Twitter, especially on Twitter, you have a lot of news items that are just made up. They just made it up. And especially in an age of AI, where most videos, most photos, most news items are just completely made up by AI. And I've trained my mind to be able to spot the difference, okay? So what I'm going to do now, okay, just to illustrate, is I'm going to go over my Twitter feed, and I'm going to tell you how I perceive each news item. All right. All right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go and look over look at my Twitter feed and, we're going to, I'll share you the screen. Okay. All right. So this is my Twitter feed. Okay. And quite honestly, I don't know what comes onto my Twitter feed. Okay. The General says, breaking, Elon Musk has asked Grok whether a post claiming that the Congress hiding the U.S.-Israel military relationship in the defense bill is true. Yeah, I ignore this. I think this is made up. This is China. Bill Bishop is saying, he was absolutely intending to build an economic control point which rare earths disaster China, Japan after 2010. Another bad take from the SIS professor. I don't care. We move very quickly from two-tier policing doesn't exist to two-tier policing does exist and a good thing. I don't care. I don't even know what this is. This is Mariel Nafal, who I don't follow, but he appears in my, feed. China didn't wait long to respond. Hours of Japan and Philippines announced maritime delimitation talks east of Taiwan. Beijing launched a law enforcement operation in those waters. Okay, this is something that I will focus on and pay attention to. Okay, actually, Mariel Nafal, you guys should follow him because he's very good. He has a really strong team working behind him. This is a conflict I've been watching very closely. At some point, China and Japan will go kinetic, meaning they will fight over shipping lanes in the South China Sea. They have no choice in the matter, okay? So this is something that I watch and I'll pay attention to. And now what I'll do is I'll keep it back in my mind where, and what I'll remember is this. Japan and the Philippines are working together, okay? I also remember that Japan wants to clarify a lot of things in East Asia. So for the longest time, there was strategic ambiguity in these waters, and China kept on encroaching, especially its shipping vessels, and Japan didn't really bother because Japan didn't want a conflict. But now Japan wants a conflict, so Japan will be much more clear about where its territorial waters are. Okay, so this is something I'm going to watch very, very closely. Okay, this emerging conflict between China and Japan in the South China Sea. Mr. Relabel says, are the Iranians really going door to door and running up Israelis? This is BS. This is not true. This is not even funny. Okay. Adam Corolla says, he's a sociopath and hears about nothing. I interviewed him and have no idea who he is. I can't say that about anyone else. Invitation. The question is why he is that attractive to people. I obviously have no idea who he's talking about. Okay. High cortisol is the real reason you can't sleep through the night. Look, this is something I'm interested in because I have problems sleeping. It's cortisol, but I have cortisol because the world is screwed up, guys. All right. That's the issue. It's not because, you know, you shouldn't be stressful. You should be stressed because the world is screwed up. So I scroll through this a lot. So the Pentagon just declared Israel an enemy of the U.S. the same week Congress voted to merge our militaries with theirs. Am I getting that right? This is a great post. And it shows you the dissonance at play here, right? And that's why I'm interested in what's going on. Because the question is raised as to why the Pentagon is leaking about its concern about Israel while at the same time Congress is voting to merge these two militaries. It shows you these factional struggles within the American military. Tim Dillon is great, by the way. I love Tim Dillon. I think he's the funniest comedian right now. Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner have purchased their private island with a bunker because they know something big is coming within the next 6 months. This is not true, by the way, okay? Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, these people, they live in a fantasy world where they are the best and the brightest, where they got to where they are because they worked hard, they're smarter than everyone else, and the world is just perfect. And they don't have a conscious understanding of the public outrage at people like them. So they live in fantasy world. They're delusional. They don't really believe that the world will turn against them. They think they control the world and they are the perfect rulers and everyone loves them. So, you know, they bought that island not because they want to build a bunker. They bought that island because, first of all, it's not their money. They're just the front people, right? They're just the actors. They bought the island because it was a good investment. It's as simple as that. Kash Patel is investigating China's oil trip to Russia. This I think is true. This I think has credibility. I won't be surprised if there's concern among the FBI that Candace Owens is now under the influence of the Russians. You know, for the longest time, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA were spying on Tucker Carlson. You guys don't remember this, but Tucker Carlson, when he was at Fox News, he was actually scheduled to go to Russia to interview Vladimir Putin. And the CIA, they spied on Tucker Carlson. They knew about this and they sabotaged the trip. Tucker Carlson would eventually go, of course, but that was like 4 or 5 years after he originally wanted to go. Alexander Dugan says, if it is Israel, are you also willing to know? Okay. Sean Wren and Escobar. Okay, so I'm just scrolling through and I'm telling my thought process, okay? And I'm doing this really, really fast. So my mind is able to prioritize what's important. My mind is also able to figure out what's fake, what's not fake. But it's because I've been doing this for a long time, okay? All right. Wakar asks, do you think Iran will use its military power to fight back and attack and take over some countries to create a second line of defense? No, I think a ground offensive by the Iranians would be complete suicide, right? Because then you're exposed to air power. And that's what the Americans and Israelis specialize in. So Iran will continue its hide-and-seek guerrilla warfare strategy throughout. Earl Grey asks, do you think Candace Owens is a deep plant by the MIC? Okay, yeah. So if you go to the very top, okay, if you go to Washington, D.C., and you go to these parties, if you go to Hamptons for the summer, and you go to these parties, guys, these guys are all friends, okay? They're all related to one another. But that doesn't mean they don't actually hate each other, okay? They're all fighting for power. And so they're all related to each other. They're all friends. They all have similar interests. And within these boundaries, within these conditions, they struggle for control over certain things, okay? So you look at artificial intelligence. Most artificial intelligence companies are backed by Wall Street. But it doesn't mean that Silicon Valley and Wall Street don't fight, right? Because they're both trying to direct Washington policy in a certain way that benefits them. So that's something that's really hard for people to appreciate, that at the very top, everyone's playing a multidimensional game. Everyone has divided loyalties, allegiances, because everyone's trying to position himself or herself in a way to maximize his or her power. Okay, it's a very complicated game, and that's why they're all psychopaths, man. You know, they're all sociopaths. You can't actually read them. They're amazing poker players. You can never ever read their minds, and you can never actually figure out what their intention is. And that's why it's important to use game theory, because game theory just removes yourself from the personalities and just looks at the game and how the players will try to navigate the game. That gives you the best indicator of how they behave. But yeah, Candace Owens is friends of everyone. Okay? Miko G asks, is it possible Candace is being influenced by foreign intelligence agencies, specifically those opposing the West? Yeah, but I would argue that that's how the world works. I think like there are many different groups and they're all working together and they're all opposing each other. It's not as easy as, is Candace a spy? I think she has friends in Mossad. I think she has friends in the KGB, the FSB. I think she has friends in CIA. And she probably doesn't even know it, right? She probably doesn't know these friends are actually CIA or Mossad. And, you know, but they'll have dinner together and they'll talk. And then this friend will give her some information that then she will deliver on her show. And so she's being a useful idiot. And that's how the world works. And that's what makes me unique in that I actually don't talk to people. Because I know, like, if I talk to people, they'll just feed me crap that is meant to influence others. Okay, I'd rather just stick to game theory analysis. Wakar asks, what do you think about PDB and Mehdi Hasan? So I've been both their show. I've been on both their shows. And my interview with Mehdi Hasan went viral. He's just a very naturally combative person. He's very good at what he does. I mean, he's very good at taking your words and then warping a certain way that allows him to attack you. Okay, so he's always in attack mode. And PBD, he's a businessman. He's a bit of a hustler. He's a hustler, really. And he likes a lot of back and forth, but he likes to feel you out, right? So when the two are together, Mehdi Hasan will run him over because Mehdi Hasan, he's all attack, whereas PBD, he's trying to be smooth, right? So that's not really a fair matchup. Seren Caron asks, how much reach does this have on the people of America? I remember Tucker went to Russia as well. They both are very religious. Is it from that angle to speak to the people of the United States? Listen, I think that Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson are two of the most influential people in America right now. I think it's very smart for Russia to try to cozy up to both of them. And I'm not saying they're powerful, not necessarily because of numbers, okay? I'm saying they're powerful because their fans really believe in their message. Their message really is able to resonate with their audience. Also, I have to say that Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson are two of the smartest, most savviest media personalities right now. And what makes them really smart is they're able to read the political winds. That's really hard to do, actually, to anticipate the trend, right? Not to follow the trend, but to anticipate the trend. That's what Tucker and Candace do really, really well. So look, Tucker's talking a lot about demons, about spirituality. And so he knows that there's this yearning among the American people for spiritual deliverance. There's almost now a tipping point where a lot of people are now going to return to the faith. I think the fastest growing religion in America right now is the Orthodox Church religion, because the Orthodox Church religion is the most conservative, the most traditional, the most consistent. So I think Kenneth and Tucker are really smart, and they'll just go from strength to strength. If I were an investor and Tucker and Kenneth were stocks, I put all my money on Kenneth and Tucker. Some media personalities that I think are declining are people like Joe Rogan. They're declining in influence. I think Nick Fuentes is declining in influence as well. I think that Kenneth and Tucker will only become more influential over time. Aerograss, is he Opus Dei? That's a great question. I think she's Jesuit affiliated. Is she Opus Dei? I don't know. I know that J.D. Vance is Opus Dei. Opus Dei, if you don't know, is one of the secret societies of the Catholic Church. There are many, many secret societies of the Catholic Church, by the way. But Opus Dei is one of the most famous. It's extremely hierarchical, and it's extremely messianic. So I would not be surprised at all if she was Opus Dei. It's possible her husband, George Farmer, is Opus Dei, and she's not. That I think is most likely possibility. Matthew says, how does one even get close to high ups in a group like the Catholic Church? Do you think it's direct when one of them approach each other or informal? I assume the Catholic Church is run by certain families. I think there are certain families that have the real power in the Catholic Church. And so they reach out to you through their agents, their intermediaries, basically. So it's not like come to my house and we'll start a contract. It's more like, I have a friend who's a friend who knows you and who's going to pass on messages to you. Okay. Sally asks, as someone who's choosing a military career here in the United States, what can I study further about this possible merge between the U.S. military and Israel? So if you are going into the U.S. military, I would say a very bright future, okay? So I think there's certain trends that you should watch out for in the U.S. military. First of all, I think the U.S. military is going to expand rapidly over the next 10, 20 years. The reason why is America needs control over the Western Hemisphere. So I would be surprised if the military went in to colonize places like Mexico, Colombia, Honduras, Cuba, Greenland, possibly even as far as Venezuela. And so basically, if you're in the military, you become basically a viceroy, right? You become a military dictator. And so that's a very good life, right? If you can go and become a part of the military occupation. Another thing that is going to happen in the military is privatization, right? Because what America wants to do is retreat from the world and focus on the Western Hemisphere. And so the best way to do that is to privatize your military and then merge your private military with Japan, Germany, Israel, right? Okay. The idea is you privatize the military, they become companies that then sign contracts with host nation states such as Israel, Japan, and Germany. Okay. That I think are the two major trends. A military occupation of the Western Hemisphere, and the privatization of the American military, which then merges with into other nation states, okay? But if you're in the military, that's a very good future. And Wong asks, are most of data centers dubious? Seems like just high trouble, fire the workers, fake the data center to keep the stock from collapsing. Yeah, listen, we have absolutely no idea what's going on in these data centers. And they're so huge, right? So I would not be surprised if these data centers are being set up as a false flag. And what I mean by that is they store all the financial data in these data centers and then it's blown up, right? By this lone wolf, Unabomber guy, who at all is not MKUltra, who at all is not CIA affiliated. Not at all, okay? But he's working by himself. He's not part of this CIA team. These data centers blown up and oops, all that financial data is gone and it's the Iranians who did this. So yeah, so I would not be surprised if there was a false flag attack on these data centers at some point. Matthew asks, thoughts on Nick Fuentes? Look, I think Nick is a really talented guy. I've never met him. I don't know him. I've never been on his live stream. He would never invite me for a conversation. I'm very close with Sneeko, who's also very close with Nick. I think he's a really smart guy. But I think at the same time, he's deeply compromised. Certain things he says suggest that he's not free to say whatever he wants. His anti-Semitic rants, I think, are not at all organic. I can understand why someone's angry at Israel. I can understand why people have problems with Zionism. But the fact that he attacks Jewish people, I think it's problematic. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's capable of nuance and subtlety. The fact that on this Jewish question, he refuses to have nuance and subtlety, I think it's problematic. Also, if you really want to understand why Nick Fuentes is probably compromised, Google January 6th and Nick Fuentes. It's a very problematic thing, okay? But once you read about his actions on January 6th and the fact that he was not at all charged or persecuted for what he did on January 6th, it suggests that he's probably compromised, okay? So January 6th and Nick Fuentes. Ricardo asks, can I organize a meeting in Toronto with you, with like-minded people? Okay, I am going back to Toronto. I am going back to North America. But I'm figuring out what I want to do yet. And so let me think about this, okay? It's still 2 months out before I return to Toronto. So let me think about how I want to structure my time. Because I'm a very private person, and I don't want to become a celebrity in Toronto. I'm in China, no one knows who I am. And I prefer it that way. So let me think about how to best meet people in Toronto. If we do a small meetup, I'm okay with that. But if it's a public event, I'm not okay with that. I don't be mobbed by people. I don't want people following me back to my house. Archer asks, is AI about to get an 08 style bailout, or is it going to be from investors? It's going to get a bailout, guys. The government's going to take over AI at some point. Okay, that's why you have Operation Stargate. That's why you have this talk between Altman and Bernie Sanders. They're just setting up a bailout. Okay, it's like these things. It's a bubble. It's going to burst at some point. The government has to step in and bail them out. Matthew says, I would love to organize a meetup in New York for VCs, Theo Fellows. Yeah. Again, as long as it's private, I'm okay with that. As long as it's invitation only, as long as you don't publicize it, we can discuss it. So yeah, it's two months away. Let's discuss the possibility. You know, something really funny is Stanford Republican Club. So the Stanford Young Republican Club has reached out to me and says they would love for me to come and talk to them. And I want to do so. I would love to go to Stanford and meet the future Peter Thiels of the world and have a conversation with them. I think eventually Peter Thiel and his people are going to conquer the world. So it's probably a good thing to become friends with people like Peter Thiel. But let me think some more about how to do this. Okay. But thanks for reaching out. I'd love to do some private meetups in Toronto and New York. Salat Jones asks, could Candace become an agent that helps push forward the third room eschatology? Yeah, I think so. I think that's intention. I think that's what the game theory suggests. Okay. I think Candace Owens also appreciates the ideas of Alexander Dugin. Curious Curse asks, about the data centers being funded by public money, can I just announce an AI strategy that sounds like they want state-owned AI and data centers? Do you think people like Altman will see it as a threat or find a way to sell to countries? So there's no AI competition, okay? There just isn't. Because if you think about it, what AI is, it's a mechanism for state to exert maximum control over people, right? So these states that are introducing AI surveillance, like Britain, Canada, China, United States, they actually work with each other. They're not competing against each other. It's something that people don't really appreciate about geopolitics, where these intelligence agencies, Mossad, FSB, MSS, CIA, they're actually friends with each other. They're working together because ultimately they are parasites on the nation state. And they're trying to absorb as much power and financing for themselves as possible. And the way you do that is you manufacture threats, right? You say, if you don't give us money, then the FSB, Mossad, MSS will take us over, right? We have to defend against them, right? So this nation, so intelligence agencies, militaries don't compete against each other. They work with each other. Same thing with AI data centers. They don't compete against each other. They work against each other. Okay? Daryl Fry asks, nuclear capability and ground troops. Given reports that Iran announced a nuclear bomb, does this change your prediction about a U.S. ground invasion? Okay, let me address this nuclear bomb issue, because like, I know that Larry Johnson and Pepe Escobar, who I at least are two people I respect, by the way, they went on Judging Freedom, Josh Nalpino, who I think is fantastic. I mean, I'm a huge fan of all these people. But the three of them did a tremendous disservice to everyone, especially Iranians, by saying that Iran already has a nuclear weapon. Okay? This is really dangerous and stupid. And this is not a good thing for anyone. So what they're saying is that a third party, it could be Pakistan, North Korea, who knows, okay? But they've given nuclear weapons to Iran. Okay. From a game theory perspective, why would Iran want this, okay? Because if someone gives you a nuclear weapon, first of all, how do you know it works? How do you know it works, number one? Number two is, a nuclear weapon by itself does nothing for you. You need the delivery system, okay? You need control and command mechanisms so that you can actually send a nuclear weapon where you want. Otherwise, that nuclear weapon might blow up in your face, right? Literally blow up in your face. So that's problem number two. Problem number three is, how do you do maintenance, right? What does three nuclear weapons get you? Okay, well, you're forced to blow up one. You might detonate one to test it out and send a message, and you have two nuclear weapons. America has found some nuclear weapons, right? So from a game theory perspective, America would love for Iran to have a nuclear weapon, because that justifies America using nuclear weapons against Iran. And only if America uses nuclear weapons against Iran can America win this war, right? So I don't know what's happening, but Larry Johnson and Pepe Escobar and George Nalpino, and they could be useful idiots, or they could be more malicious, but they're actually helping shape the American narrative, right? If people are afraid that Iran has a nuclear weapon, then you send in ground troops, you send in your Air Force to knock out Iran's capacity to deliver these nuclear weapons, right? I guarantee you, if Israel has concrete evidence that Iran has a nuclear weapon, it's planning to use it against Tel Aviv, Israel is an attack first. There's absolutely no way that Israel will allow Iran to do a first strike against Tel Aviv. There's absolutely no way. All right. So I don't know what's going on, but I think it's complete nonsense. It's complete BS. It's very dangerous for people to believe that Iran has a nuclear weapon. Question number two from Daryl Fry. Economic crisis. Do you agree that this war was engineered to cause a global depression and force a rollout of CBDCs? If yes, how will that play out in Canada? And what steps should individuals take right now to protect themselves? So I think CBDCs are going to come regardless. It's already happening in Canada, where I think Mark Carney is making it illegal to have more than $2,000 in cash. I don't know if this has passed or he's just discussing it. But yeah, I mean, like in China, it's a CBDC society. And I don't understand why Canada and the United States can't have this as well. So the question is, do you think this has all been engineered? I don't think it's engineered. I think it's just, they know it's going to happen. They know that a financial crash is going to happen. They know that war is going to break out. So why not accelerate events and then control events? Okay, so I don't think they are smart enough to actually engineer these things. I think they are responding and reacting to real time crises. Okay, so remember the Iran war. I've said this many times. It's not. It's a response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It's a response to a growing alliance between Russia, China, and Iran. JD asks, what is your take on Peter Thiel? I think he's the smartest guy in the world right now. I think he's very strategic. I think he has a higher purpose. He is He seems to be on a mission. And I don't think there's anyone in the world that can stop him. So the thing to know about really smart people is they don't like to fight each other. They like to work together. And Peter Thiel is someone you want to stay clear of. He's very smart. He's very dangerous. I think he's a lot smarter than Elon Musk. I think he's a lot smarter than Jeff Bezos. I mean, what is Jeff Bezos doing with his time? He's shooting phalluses up into space. You know, he's going to these silly parties with his wife. It's embarrassing what he's doing. It's like you're a billionaire, man. And you're like you're trying to get attention for yourself. I mean, like, grow up, man. Ian says, "Hi, Professor. I heard you speak about DEI being a bad thing for America. Can you clarify what it is? That's one part that I never understood." Okay. So my problem with DEI is this. Martin Luther King Jr., throughout the 1960s, his main argument is we should not judge anyone by the color of his skin. We should be fair to everyone. We should look beyond race and look at character and look at merit and look at hard work. That's something that I strongly believe in, and it makes sense, right? So how do we get to a time when all that matters is your skin color? If you're Black, if you're Hispanic, if you're gay, if you're a woman, then you've historically been oppressed, and therefore society has a responsibility to address these historical wrongs. What I think DEI really is, it's a tool used by the financial elite, people like Larry Fink, to distract people from legitimate grievances against class inequality in America, right? So I think DEI is a direct response to Occupy Wall Street. Occupy Wall Street, people forget this, but Occupy Wall Street had the potential to become a real revolution, a political revolution in America. You know, it's like 99%. Let's unite together, right? So how do you divide Occupy Wall Street? Well, you break it down according to race, meaning like, you know, Black versus white, right? So if you look at Antifa, if you look at the George Floyd protest, these were not organic things. They were clearly engineered. They're clearly being sponsored. So I have a lot of issues with DEI. Jess asks, Professor Jiang, how will Section 224 affect the current Iran war? Look, I think Iran is just a forever war. I think like the entire point of Section 224 is to commit America forever to this war, right? So because Israel is at war, America's stuck there, right? So make Israel a scapegoat. And then because of Section 224, America is obligated to always be there to support Israel. Christy asks, what's happening with the ceasefire between the United States and Iran? This ceasefire, it's all theater. I mean, like, it's all to buy time. They're either waiting for a false flag, just for a ground invasion, or they're just wrapping up forces for a ground invasion. But the next step is a ground invasion, okay? MCOJ asks, who do you think will win the AI race and why, China or America? I think the oligarchs will win the AI race, right? China and America are partners in AI. China gives America a reason, a pretext to roll out an AI surveillance state. America gives China a reason to roll out its own AI surveillance state. They're all friends. Christy asks, Michael Burry, yeah, he's a really smart guy. He has recently written that AI boom resembles financial bubble. Yeah, but there's nothing you can do about it because all the money is being controlled by a few select group of people, right? So what if the bubble bursts? What does that get you? The government is just going to step in and bail them out, right? So, and also like it's a rigged game. So they know when the bubble bursts. You don't know when the bubble bursts. They can drag this out for another 10 years, right? The bubble's going to burst eventually. But they can drag this out for as long as they want. So Michael Burry has said this, but I think also Michael Burry is not betting against these AI companies because it's suicide to bet against these AI companies. Okay. Sarah Curran asks, are you planning to make a timeline of topics in the live stream, Professor, or are we going to work on it to date for game theory and build on that? Yeah, so the live stream is meant to be much more interactive. It's meant to be much more organic, free-flowing. And so it might become much more structured over time, but in the beginning, we'll just do some tests, okay? So this is a live stream, the first live stream. I'll go back and I'll reflect on how it went, and please offer some feedback as well as how you think it went. And then next time I'll make adjustments, okay? And we'll keep on doing that for the next 6 months before I build a structure, okay? Matthew asks, do you feel like America is like in its Weimar Republic phase? I think this is very much like the 1920s. So I think what we should expect is the Great Depression and a stock market collapse. NR asks, what kind of spiritual belief do China people practice? People here love money, man. Chinese are the most materialistic people you will ever meet. It's money, money, money. That's all that matters. I'll talk more about this later on, okay? Okay, guys. I am pretty exhausted. I had no idea that these live streams could be this exhausting, because it's just me talking endlessly. And it's also me trying to read the chat as well as answer your questions. And the questions are all over the place. So this is pretty exhausting. And so I'm going to have to stop now, okay? But let me think much more deeply about how this live stream went. And we'll do this again next month at maybe a different time, maybe 9 p.m. I'm sorry if that's convenient for some people, but I'm trying to bring in as many different people as possible. And please remember, like, next week will be another live stream for paid subscribers, okay? So this live stream is only for founding members. Next week will be for paid subscribers. And you're all welcome to that as well. And I love the idea of meetups. So hopefully you guys can help me think about how to structure meetups. I would prefer to be intimate and invitation only, and not publicized at all, in order to maintain my own personal safety. Okay, so great conversation, guys. We're gonna have to end it. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your questions, but let's continue this next month. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your week.